Support for everybody. To always, always have heroes. It's a great checklist to check off. An evaluation for yourself. If you ask yourself, maybe we'll take a second. Nobody shout out, and nobody, it's not a, it's not confessional over here. You don't have to shout out who your hero is. But just to, if you're ever wondering where you're at in life, what are your values, what are your priorities, what do you think is really important? I'll ask you, who are your heroes? Who are the ones that you look up to? Who are the ones that you really, who are the people that you really think they're great? Why are these people, what about them? What have they accomplished? Well, what defines their life? What makes them rowing? What makes them fit for them, for you to choose that they should be your hero? I have a number of them for different reasons. Hopefully by the time we finish tonight, you'll understand why it's critical. That there's not just one, but why there are many. One of them is Rav Meir Shapiro Kuglin. Anybody here? Rav Meir Shapiro Kuglin. Anybody been to Israel yet? Here, Rav Meir Shapiro Kuglin. Yeah, who's in? Who's guys? Yeah. So he's the founder of the Daf Yomi. There are some things that we take for granted in the time that we're living in, it's just part of the rhythm of life and what we have. But before they were instituted, before they were innovated, so the world was a totally different place. In the 1900s, in the early 1900s, which is only 100 years, almost 100 years ago this year. So in the early 1900s, there was no idea of Daf Yomi. What you guys experience in a lot of your morning shiur throughout the year, and while you're here, that's what Torah was across the board. People went to yeshiva. If you were capable, you went to yeshiva. If you were incapable, you didn't go to yeshiva. Tons of people were illiterate. They didn't know how to read. And this is why hundreds of years before, this is why the Baal Shem Tov started Hasidus, is because there was a notion that you couldn't learn, so you weren't a good enough Jew. Because all you can do is you're one of those guys that just daven. You're not smart enough to learn. And it created an inferiority complex. Okay, anyway, comes from Meir Shapiro in 1923, I believe, and says, wait a second, I got an idea. That everybody, all Jews across the world, no matter where you are, no matter who you are, no matter what age, no matter what kind of group you associate with, whether you're Dati Lomi or Haredi or super Orthodox, ultra Orthodox, whatever it might be, how cool would it be if we started a system where Jews across the world all learned the same page of Gemara, and this way, for me, when I was growing up, guys, you went to summer camp. So when you're in school, you're with your friends the whole time. You show up at camp for the first time. My parents, God bless them, sent me to camp when I was 6 years old, sleepaway camp. For the first time when I was 6 years old, I think nowadays you'd probably get arrested for doing something like that. I tried to be super tough. I had to show off some bravado. But in truth, maybe we'll cover the tape for a second. In truth, every night I went to sleep and I cried myself to sleep, 6 years old. Who could go to summer camp then? But you show up in this bunk and maybe you have a guy or two or three maybe that are friends from school. But then you're thrown together with a whole bunch of other guys. How are you going to connect with them? So back then it was easy to talk sports. Everybody had something. Whether you were a Met fan or a Yankee fan or a Giant or a Jet or you're from Los Angeles or from Chicago. Everybody had a common bond. We talk sports. Nowadays, you don't have to talk sports. Nowadays, it's a whole lot of other things. People are into technology, into stocks, into Bitcoin, into whatever. You find something that you could link in, you could bond with another person. So Meir Shapiro said, why shouldn't that be Torah? How cool would it be that when you're in an airport waiting somewhere, that you can just go over to another Jew and be like, yo, dude, did you see the Daf and Sukkah today? How awesome was that Pasuk Beros? Did you see that Sheet of Rav? Wasn't that amazing? And the guy's like, yeah, that's the coolest thing ever. Right away, instantaneously, you'll be holding in the same place. You'll have an automatic bot. In fact, we had the last Daf Yomi Siyum, so they told the story about Rabbi Judd Lipschitz, who gives Daf Yomi in Silver Spring. When he was in the airport in Columbus, Ohio, so there was, the story? So when he was in the airport in Columbus, Ohio, so he, what do they call those people at the check-in? CT?
TSA.
TSA, right? I don't know who else, it was just trying to have, you know, participation. So the TSA, one of the TSA guys was an Orthodox Jew. And as he was going through, so he stops him. You know, you get annoyed when the TSA guy stops him. Like, oh God, what did I forget? Is there food? You know, did I have money in my pocket? What did they get me for? So he pulls him over to the side and he says to him, I have a kasha on the daf from today's daf. And he didn't know, I don't think he knew that Rabbi Lifshitz quote the daf Yomi. But he's like, all right, okay, I'll help you out with the daf. And they went into a little back room in the side room over there and they learned daf Yomi. All the non-Jews were like, well, what are the Jews doing? What are they, you know, what are they reading over there? But that was Rabbi Shapiro's dream. That didn't exist. That didn't exist 100 years ago. But he decided, I have a great idea. And then all of a sudden, the whole world changed. That's not the only thing that he revolutionized. Anybody else know what? Anybody else know what Rabbi Meir Shapiro came up with? Yes, there. Anybody know what else he came up with? So he started a yeshiva in Lublin, called Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. What was unique about that? It was the first time that there was ever a yeshiva that had a dormitory. This kollel is an image of Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. Well, you guys go to Israel for the year. So that idea that you have a yeshiva, where the yeshiva provides for you a dorm and food, that didn't exist. People used to sleep on benches in the yeshiva or have to go to the bakery to sleep near the oven. He had this revolutionary idea that we're going to start a yeshiva where the yeshiva provides food and dorm. For you guys, that's normal. For him, it was a revolution. Okay, so for many reasons, I view him as heroic. One of the legendary stories that surrounds Rabbi Meir Shapiro's emergence is that one time when he was already successful, he was already famous, so he was in a train station, and some woman comes to him and says, wow, Rabbi Shapiro, so great to see you. I don't know if you remember me. I was the babysitter. I babysat you and your friends way back when in the town, wherever we grew up. It's so amazing. It's so amazing to see that how much you accomplished in life. So he wasn't an arrogant person, Rabbi Shapiro, real tzaddik. He says, oh yeah, I definitely remember you. And I hear that you're a very successful educator right now as well. Like, I don't know, she's trying to be humble. Yeah, I don't know, whatever. He's like, yeah, I heard you do good things. But if you want to be really wildly successful, he says to her, I remember when I was talking when I was a kid, and I had big dreams, and you laughed at me, and you said they would never happen. All these dreams about all Jews learning the same thing, and you laughed, you chuckled, you're like, ah, like very funny. He's like, never laugh at somebody else's dreams. You never know what's going to end up happening. But the question for us is, Rabbi Meir Shapiro is unbelievable, a revolutionary. Rabbi Josh Fass, a revolutionary. He started a program called Nefesh B'Nefesh, which has brought tens of hundreds of thousands of people at this point. Hundreds of thousands of people on Aliyah. Nobody, unbelievable. Somebody who had an idea that said, oh, we could break through bureaucracy, we could do something. Nachum Siegel is a revolution, for real. He's a revolutionary. Whoever thought that there could be such a thing as Jewish radio before? But he had an idea, he stuck with it, long before Garvey was born. I remember everybody's laughing, who's ever going to be successful at having Jewish radio, but you stick with your idea, you're persistent, and then look what ends up developing. It's such a huge institution. So that sets the stage for us for a lot of trouble. Because you have these people who are real heroes, people who are real, who accomplish unbelievable things. And then we're left sometimes stuck looking in the mirror saying, like, okay, wait a second. But is it possible for me? How is it that I'm gonna, you know, how can I create something unique in the world? Where's my thing going to be? Like, you know, first of all, it seems already obvious that, like, everybody's got all the ideas already. You know, they're all out. That guy was so smart. He was so creative. He was so innovative. So he came up with that idea. He did amazing things. the one I mentioned before, whoever had the idea, the crazy idea, that high school guys from America would want to come and learn for the summer. And that first time when we had like four or five guys that came to learn, four or five guys have turned into now 361. Unbelievable, year after year. It's such a crazy thing. Okay, these guys are dreamers. Sof Masad and Achshav Etchila. That's really awesome. But I'm not that creative. I'm not that innovative. I can't invent stuff. Trust me, I spend a lot of time. Because I look at some of these things, I just want to invent something that Google's going to buy for like $1 billion, you know, and then we'll be set. But I'm like, I'm sitting there. If anybody's got any ideas for me, so let me know. You know, but I still haven't, you know, because I'm here and still working. I'm not in some big fat house in Hawaii somewhere. You know, obviously, it hasn't happened yet. I'm like, yeah. So some of us think, like, okay, wait a second. Is the only way to be a hero, or is the only way to be great, is that only if I come up with something that's unbelievable, only if I come up with something that's great? And what if I don't feel that I can? And what if I look in the mirror and I'm like, and especially when I look at some of my friends, and I see what they're doing. Or I look at, I look at my parents, and you have parents like that. They did unbelievable things. And I'm like, well, how am I ever going to follow in their footsteps? You know, it's that I don't feel inside of me that that's something that I can do. Okay. It's a great question. It's a great question. So, first of all, this is not the point of what I'm talking about, but don't be afraid to swing for the fences. If we don't take risks, so we're never going to hit a home run. one of the greatest things about the life that we're living in, you know, we had a, some of you have heard me say this before, it's just on my mind so much, that you know, now that Corona ended, there was a big disagreement in our community. I'm sure we're not the only ones that had this. And that is coming back to shul. Right? They opened up the shuls and the rabbi sent out the call, you got to come back. And there were a lot of people that were hesitant to come back. Okay, the most legitimate reason to not go back to shul right away were the people that didn't want to daven in their masks. You know, it's a little bit hot. It's hard to breathe. I'd rather daven outside. We don't need masks. Better for kavanah. Okay, I hear it. But then they said no masks. You know, you don't need masks in shul either. And people still didn't want to come back. So there was a whole, one of the people on our driveway meeting chat. So somebody in defense of the Rav wrote a really heavy, harsh note to the community about Yusha's face and Medrash and about how everybody comes back. You know, wherever I was holding at the time, but as a rabbinic figure, the Rav called me in and said, I need you to step up and come back to shul. I said, okay. I said, I'll come back to shul for Shacharis and Mincha, but Ma'ariv I'm outside. So the Rav's like, Ma'ariv? Like what? Because there's no Chazaras HaShatz? Like why Ma'ariv you got to do outside? So you got to know that in Ramat Beit Shemesh we had such awesome weather over the COVID year that in an entire year there were only two nights that we couldn't go out in Ma'ariv with the Minyan outside because of weather. We had Minyan every single other night, over 350 whatever nights it was, we had Minyan. So I said to the Rav the following. I said, I'm standing outside in the middle of Ma'ariv. I was never into stars. I was never into astronomy. Like, I don't know, whatever you read, the stories in the Chumash and whatever. And you're like, yeah, whatever, some scientist, heebie-jeebie, this, that, and the other. I was never into stuff like that. But now I start davening outside. And you start Shemona Esrei, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elohim Elokeinu Seinu. And listen, I have just as hard time as anybody else. When we say Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibur, Vanora. And we know that we're supposed to understand what the translation of these words are. But at the end of the day, who really understands what Kel, Gadol, Gibor, and Nora are? And I'm supposed to get it. So I said to them, you know what? I'm standing under the stars every single night. I'm looking at the expanse of the universe. And you know what? For the first time, I understood what Nora was. To see how amazing the solar system and how far our existence goes beyond anything that we can comprehend. I said, then I'm ready to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at night. He's like, okay, what's reason number two? I said, let me tell you about reason number two. Is that I noticed over the course of the year, I've been following the constellations move across the sky. And what it told me was that no matter what kind of day that I had, built into the nature of the world is the statement that tomorrow is going to be a different day. That it doesn't matter what happened yesterday, it doesn't matter what happened today, the stars are going to be in a different place tomorrow. The world is always turning. The world will never be in the same place. And the opportunity is going to exist for me to become something, for me to create, for me to do, something to define myself in whatever way that I want. And you know what? I've had a lot of bad days. I've had bad days as Eved Hashem. I've had bad days as a parent. I've had bad days as a friend. Maybe as a husband. And then I go daven Maariv outside. And I look up at the stars. And I see that they move. And I comfort myself to say, like, oh, sick. That's awesome. Tomorrow's another day and I can become something that I didn't want to do today. I can correct it and fix it. And I can define myself the way I want it to be defined. And it gives me comfort and allows me to daven with more kavanah. So the Rav said, fine. Shachris and Mincha Shul and Maariv and Maariv outside. Okay, anyway, the Maariv minyan ended up fizzling out. Now we do. Now we do three minyanim. We do three minyanim in Shul. But once we get into everybody, it's doing it that way. Anyway, that's the point, that in the very fabric of the world that we have, the world is always moving for that reason. Part of the question is that how do we define, or what do we look at as greatness? What makes somebody great? How do we define an accomplishment or something that's really important? So the best place to always look, whenever we have a question, is always to look in the Torah to see how we want to deal with different challenges that we might have. So the very first person that had huge aspirations that didn't end up coming true, the very first person of that was Adam. What was Adam's aspiration? Excellent, but more than that. What was he shooting for, Adam? Is that very first decision that he had? Yeah, because why? Because if he understood that then, you're right there. Just say one more word. Or at least like, right, here's his aspiration, is that Adam's going to be like Hashem. Is there any other greater aspiration than that? Do you know how close he came to fulfilling that aspiration? How many decisions did it take for him to go from godly to ungodly? One. Okay, we look at it as a bad thing. Like, oh, it got messed up. But he was one decision away from becoming godly. Okay, first of all, that's our life. We should know. We might not want to believe that because we don't want to take seriously the power of each decision that we make. He was one decision away from becoming godly. That was his aspiration. And he messed it up. Okay? Well, why did he mess it up? That could be a key for us. What happened? How did he mess that up? Where did he drop the ball? Yeah. Okay, why did he eat from the tree? Was he hungry? Does it say anywhere in the Torah he was hungry? No. Why did he mess it up? What? Right, so, but what made him, what caused him to do something wrong? Where was the, not the snake, close, yeah. Okay, so the Yetzirah, but let's think more Pashup Shah. Okay, so somebody else, if he wanted to be over specific about it, he get it the whole thing over here, how women impact their Avodas Hashem. No, we're being recorded, so I don't want to go down that road right now. Maybe that's for a more private issue. But if you wonder about where girls fit in your Avodas Hashem, you might pay to study a little bit that section of the Torah and see what ends up happening. That's true. But let's just say it's another person. So what ends up happening here? You have Adam. He's on the verge of being, if he was alone maybe, even though that's not the way to do it either. But if Adam wasn't impacted, influenced by somebody else, So then maybe he would have gotten that. Maybe he would have gotten the godly. But somebody said to him, yo, somebody influential in his life said to him, whoa, Adam, you got to eat from the tree. Right? Maybe the conversation was, I know it might not be necessarily the thing that's so right. But where did Chava go wrong? But what? I made a rough already. All right, don't suspect. Yeah. What? So she got influenced, but by what? Yeah, the snake maybe talked a little bit. If you look at the psukim, the Torah says she looked at the tree and what? Yeah.
She wanted to know.
She wanted to know, but she wanted. The Torah says that the tree was attractive. It was tov lamare, tov lamachol, the nechmad lamare, the tov lamachol was attractive. There was something exciting about it. There was something fun about it. Sound familiar to anybody? That in decisions that we have about whether we want to be godly or not godly, and maybe the godly's a little stale, maybe the godly seems a little bit boring, and the other way seems more exciting, it's nechmad lamare. Whoa, that's fun. Right, I want to watch that, I want to see that, I want to play that, I want to do that. Right? It makes sense, it's exciting. That's the same decision that we all have. So somebody says to Adam for the first time, check it out. And in the world that we're living in right now, at least for myself, maybe you guys are stronger than I am, always looking around to see what's everybody else thinking about what I'm doing. How am I being judged, and how am I being viewed, and how are my friends going to see what I'm doing? What are they going to think about it? What are they judging me as to be based on the decisions that I'm... And what if I would be that guy that would choose godly? Am I going to be left alone? I'm be sitting on the side because I chose that? And who in the world ever wants to be left alone? At that point, there's only two people. Chav already chose that she was going with the Nechmad Lamara. So Adam says, I don't want to be alone. Whoever wants to be left alone, I got to go with the crowd. And then he ends up making a mistake. Okay, that mistake costs us an awful lot. I don't know if in our lives we'll ever make a decision that's going to have as much ramification on the world that decision that other did that happened. Okay, so then what happens? So Hashem says to him, "Oh, your Gan Eden is over. Life is not perfect anymore." I'll tell you about my father, Olam HaShalom. He was a great person. Now, here's why I tell you that you have to have multiple role models. My father was a great person, not the same way that Rav Shechter, Rav Sabalovsky, Rav Fursky was a great person. I don't remember any Torah that my father told me. My fault. Because I was always running. Whenever he wanted to learn, I was like, Dad. I got to go play Risk with my friends. That was our thing back then. I got to play football. So I don't remember much. I don't remember much Torah that he told me, except for the following. This is the only Torah that I remember that my father said. And when it comes to the Aseres HaDibros, so we know that there are two sides. There's the Bin Adam L'Malkum side and the Bin Adam L'Chaveros side. And the last one, Bin Adam L'Chaveros, don't be jealous. It's a weird command, because how do you tell somebody not to be jealous? You know, we look around and people have stuff that I wish that I could be and I wish that I could have. I wish that was me. Right? It's just part of the nature. Why is that? You know, what's so wrong about that? So my father said, or how do you beat that, let me say? How do you beat an urge such as that? How do you make that an avera when it's so natural? So my father said, what's interesting is if you look at the second side, so when it says don't kill and don't steal, there are no lists. It doesn't say don't kill your friends and your neighbors and your enemies and your mother's fourth cousin. And don't steal the car or the money and the food and the whatever it is. There are no lists. It just says don't kill, don't steal. Don't commit adultery. It doesn't give you a list about who you're not allowed to commit adultery with. When it comes to don't be jealous, all of a sudden we have a list. Don't be jealous of your friends. All of a sudden we have a list. Why do we have a list? So my father said, he gave me the name of the Belzer Rebbe. My father said, because you want to look at one thing that somebody else has. You wanna see, like, oh, I wish I was good looking like him, I wish I had money like him, I wish I was as athletic or smart, or I had a girlfriend like him, or hair like him, or whatever it might be. That's not the way that the world operates. We don't take what it's silly to take one aspect that somebody else has and say, oh yeah, I want that. If you want something that somebody else has, So you got to take the whole package. Take everything and then decide whether that's what you really want. And at the end of the day, and especially because you never know what's going on behind closed doors. I remember when my parents got divorced. So the reaction that everybody had was, your parents got divorced? Wow, who knew? They looked like the happiest people ever. I'm like, whoa, dude, because you weren't in our house. That's why. Look, you never know. You never know what's going on behind anybody's closed door. You never know. So don't bother being jealous. Don't isolate. Don't be immature to isolate one thing that somebody else has and then, oh, I want that thing. If you want that thing, you got to take everything else and trust it. Nobody wants anybody else's is everything else. So same thing over here, says Rav Moshe Weinberger. He says, when other name from the Eitz Hadas, so then all of a sudden in the world there was death created. Nobody was supposed to die until other name from the Eitz Hadas. So either you could say the pshat is that literally death, right? That's death, or you could say that when we're always looking at something else, I'm always looking at other people. What does he have? What's he doing? How come I can't? And what about me? It's not fair. I got jipped. I got this. Hashem gave me a bad hand, bad apple. You know, all the complaints that we have. So if that's the way that we live our life, so then that is death. That's not a life to live. Instead of looking at all the things that we don't have and that we can't do, if we instead spend our time focusing on, wait a second, God put me on this world. It must be that there is something that I'm uniquely capable of doing. And if you don't believe this, so then that's the most heretical, anti-Jewish idea that you could possibly have. If you think that you're just repetitive, if you think that you're just a number, that you were just an accident, God forbid, if you think that that's heresy, if you are alive, so then the master of the world, the creator himself, testifies. If you woke up this morning, so that is the greatest testimony that says that Hashem believes more than anybody else. That you, all of us, that we have something that we can make the world today a better place. But if I'm spending my time not looking at what can I do, what can be, what are the possibilities, so then most tamus. So that kind of lifestyle is death. There's no way I'm gonna end up doing anything. And I wonder if some of us know this, is that when we spend our time looking around at what the chavas of our world are telling us to do, or even if they're not telling us, I think that they're telling me that this is what I need to do. So if we're always spending our time looking at that, so that builds the greatest anxiety of them all. But if I train myself to be comfortable, to say, and this is what COVID, for me at least, this is what COVID taught us louder than anything else. If I'm capable of allowing myself to know that all I could expect is I could try my best. If I've given it my best shot, that's all anybody could ask for. What's going to end up? I don't know. Am I going to be Rav Meir Shapiro? I don't know. Am I going to be, Rav Schechter? I don't know. Maybe yes. Maybe greater than Rav Schechter. You know, maybe not. Maybe I won't know Kol HaTorah Kula by heart, you know, by accident. Because am I going to be like my dad? My dad was a hero. Yeah, my dad was a big Adam Chavero champion. Okay, he wasn't great. He wasn't great the same way that Rav Schechter was great. But he was great at so many, if you ask Adi Goldenberg, right? My father was great at so many other casts, nothing seen that. Right? My father was great at so many other things. He was great also. Okay, so Rav Schechter kind of great, that's not me. Rav Meir Shapiro kind of great, that's not me. That's totally fine. But there's so many other forms of great, there's so many other forms of accomplishment and achievement that I could have, that if I'm not worried about what other people are judging me as great, but I'm settling in myself to say that whatever I can do is going to be great, so that I can be great and I can be a hero. Now, of course, by the way, that only means if I'm spending my time doing productive things. If I am waking up at God knows what hour, because last night I wasted my time watching Netflix, till 3-4 in the morning, and therefore I slept through. There's not a musa shmusa about chakras and morning seder. No, I couldn't care less if you got a chakras or morning seder. No, for me, who am I anyway? It's like you should care because God said so in your relationship with God, not about me. But let's say you're not into that. It doesn't speak to you. Okay, it doesn't speak to you, fine. But you're going to sleep through? Right, who went to see Aksum today? Okay, you don't want to go to chakras? That's fine. But then get your purpose to see Aksum. Go do something productive. Are you going to tell me, no, I'm not a siyatsod kind of guy. I don't want to do chesed in the world. And that's crazy. So find something. So I'm going to watch Netflix to God knows what hour, and therefore I'm going to sleep in. You know how much greatness we're losing because we're sleeping in? So yeah, if you're going to look in the mirror at that point, and you want to be a little bit down on yourself, if you have a big fat zero to show for what I've done, all right, yeah. You're probably right. That's a big fat zero. There's nothing really much to be proud of. But if I'm giving myself the best shot, if I'm thinking, like, what do I have to do? What do I have to do in order to be accomplished? What can I do? And I try my best. Right? After Adam sins. And Hashem says, okay, you're out of Gan Eden. Life's not going to be so easy anymore. You lost Gan Eden. You lost the easy. You lost the fun. If you want to be great now, you know what you're going to have to do in order to be great at this point? Right? You were one decision away from being God, then we dropped the ball. Okay? But you want to be great now, you know what you got to do? What's the punishment? What's the words in the Torah that tells us about Adam? What's his punishment? It doesn't mean you can't eat bread. You'll eat bread. But Bezeya Sapechla, now you're going to have to work a little bit harder. You're going to have to think a little bit more. You might have to be a drop more. You might have to be a drop more creative. All right, Rabosa, you know what happens after that? Okay, Adam made a mistake. He was attracted by what other people thought about him. He got messed up. He wasn't confident in himself. And because he wasn't mindful about what he could do. And because of that, he messed up. He got kicked out of Gan Eden. He doesn't have power. The only way he's going to be great now is only if he works for it. What's the end of the story? What's the end of the story of Adam Harishon? What? Okay, what's the end of the story of Adam Harishon? Right, he died. Is that the end of the story of Adam Harishon? No, what's it? Nice, that's a good shot. But the story of Adam HaRishon is not over yet. We are the end of the story of Adam HaRishon. Or we're the next step of the story of Adam HaRishon. Okay, think about that for a second. Adam HaRishon had a way of becoming godly. He was one decision away. He made a mistake. He messed up. He messed up in a way that's worse than any of us would mess up. But in the end, can you imagine if your accomplishment in the world, if your legacy is the entire planet, everything that exists in the world, anything that you consider great or not, everything comes from Adam HaRishon. That's the end of the story. So if we shoot for big things, if we say, I want to be more than just a zero, I want to do something with my life, is it wrought with roads of pitfalls and of potholes and a lot of places that we can get tripped up, full of challenges? Yes. Are we going to make mistakes? Yes. But if we can forgive ourselves, and maybe most importantly, if anybody knows anything about anxiety, which I have a feeling that a lot of us know, so anxiety happens when our brain starts running a little bit faster than the reality about like what was and about what will be. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. What did I do? Blah blah blah. You know, I can't believe I did that. And now, and in the future, now everything's going to go wrong and everything's going to be bad. I'm never going to dig out of the hole. And then on and on in a cycle, over and over and over again. And the counter to anxiety, not, I'm saying it in a way it's much easier said than done, but the counter to anxiety is be mindful. Stop for a second about the past and about the future. Stop regretting what we did and stop fretting what's going to be. And let's stop and consider what's happening in the present. Just focus on what do I have now. I can't. None of us can. Nobody could do more than deal with what we have right now at this moment. And that is a whole lot of Judaism. Judaism is about every single moment. What is it? What is it that I'm supposed to do? I go to the bathroom. I need to be mindful of what kind of gift it was of going to the bathroom. I'm about to eat a steak. I need to be mindful. Let me make a bracha. Let me be mindful about where the steak comes from and what it's all about. I went on a great trip somewhere. So before I went on the trip, I'm mindful that in order for it to be successful, I might need Hashem's help. And when it was awesome, so in retrospect, I'm thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what, when you say, Modim Anachnu Lach Rabosai. So if we don't know, Hashem should help us. I spoke to a few guys this summer already. It's mind-blowing about how few words of the Shemoneh Esrei some people know. I mean, it's not surprising that you don't like tefillah. Somebody doesn't like tefillah, they don't know what the words of the tefillah are. I mean, that's the most obvious. That's the most obvious conclusion. But when we say Modim Anachnu Lach, we say thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if it becomes more than just spitting out words that I've been saying forever, but if I stop in my Shemoneh Esrei and I think, hey, you know, what am I thankful to Hashem for? And we start listing off, in reality, you can start with the fact that we're alive. You can start with the fact that if you know anything about biology, about how all the things need to be hitting on all cylinders. Again, for those who went to CFSOD, you know what the difference is between the life that you have? CFSOD is a place for autistic and other challenges that people might have. So you know what the difference in the biology is that allows you to be you, who you are, and has them, Hashem should bless them, and their special ops, neshamas that they have for what they're doing. You know what the difference is? How close the Ramat Beit Shemesh is, a couple, unbelievable, such heroes. The wife is blind, and the husband is confined to a wheelchair. And you watch them together. It's heroic, unbelievable how they live their life. You know how close it is, and how much we have to appreciate at that point to be mindful of the fact that I have eyesight, that I could think. How unbelievable. Can you imagine if we have a memory what our life would be like? We didn't have the ability to innovate what our life would be like. So when we say Modim Anachnu Lach, while you're thinking about who your heroes are and evaluating why those are your heroes, how about tonight when we're at Maariv? Last night Maariv, by the way, one of the most unbelievable experiences I've ever had in my whole life there in Hebron. So tonight Maariv, that was making a lot of noise. We made a lot of noise last night. So forget about the noise. The noise is for everybody else. But now we're talking about what's going on inside myself. So tonight, Maariv, when we say Modim Anachnu Lach, instead of just running through and trying to get to the end, what about if we stop for a minute or two or 10 or 50, however long it takes, to start making an actual list? And maybe it might be something unbelievable that you daven out of the same sitter every time. Take out a pen, in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, if you want, or a pencil, and write in Odin, here are the things that I'm thankful for. And reflect on your life and think about all the great and awesome things that we have. So in this way, instead of worrying and always fretting and being anxious and always looking at what everybody else has, so that maybe I can recognize, whoa, you know what? Kutcher Griff was giving me awesome things. I have a list. I'm not so special. I don't think this is such a great Kiddush. Of the creed. I have a privilege being in the place that I am running this program to see incredible amounts of Siyata Shemaya. Everybody's like, whoa, it's you yesterday, unbelievable. You know, we did 22 buses yesterday. You know what it's like to operate 22 buses in one day? Unbelievable. Right? I'm not anything great. Trust me, I see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand at much greater rates than anybody, than other people than you guys do sitting in your place. So I say Modim Anachnu Lach last night in Hebron. I'm like, Modim Anachnu Lach, Hashem, wow, you executed an unbelievable day. I could have never done that on my own. Or the day that I lost my wallet in the airport when I was on the way to Chicago, and that really would have messed me up in a really, really bad way. Or that time when my kid fell, and instead of falling 1 inch to the right and cracking their skull open, so instead they just broke their collarbone. If we're mindful, if we have our eyes open and our hearts open all the time, at what's happening for us in each and every second, and to account for the blessings that we have, so then that would lead to the same way that Adam went from a mistake, that maybe he did something that was devastating, we'll never do anything in our lives that was as bad as Adam did. But we'll be able to move from devastating Adam to the world that we have, to the dynasty and the legacy that he has. So then imagine what we're able to do. It might be that greatness might be that none of you, outside of your dad, none of you know my dad. You don't know, you never heard of him. He said they didn't write an art school book about him. You know, he's a hero in so many ways. It might not be that we're going to end up Rav Schechter. That's not the point. The point, maybe we can use Rav Schechter for inspiration. But the point is, where is my greatness inside of myself? Just focus on me. Live out bringing out my positives instead of running away and focusing on all the bad things that happen. Here at the Vintage Rashman, with those brokers who open up our hearts and our minds, to be able to treat ourselves with the greatness and the honor and the forgiveness that we all deserve. We give ourselves a chance at contributing to the world and helping it be great.
Awake the whole time.